Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island Beer Company, which believes great beer can be as exciting as great music. Since 1988, Goose Island has been committed to that belief by brewing new styles of beer like 312 Urban Wheat Ale, Sophie Farmhouse Ale, and Bourbon County Stout. Goose Island, to what's next? GooseIsland.com.
This is Sound Opinions, Jim, and later on in the show, I'm going to do a Desert Island Jukebox that is devoted to a band that wrote a song about glue sniffing before the Ramones. Now, tell me, you're not intrigued, right?
I can't wait to hear it, but first we have some music news.
Turn the beat around. Love to hear percussion. Turn it upside down. Love to hear percussion. Love to hear it blow.
Greg, like a lot of people in the music world, we have been waiting to see how Apple is going to turn around Beats Music. Last year, the computer giant purchased the headphones manufacturer and the streaming service Beats for $3 billion. It has been thought that Apple needed to get into the streaming game and away from the iTunes model, already old and quaint, of you buy a song, you download it. People are moving towards streaming. Apple is threatened by Spotify. Why did it buy Beats? Well, we'll find out on June 8th when at its big annual developer conference, Apple unveils what the new Beats will look like. The Wall Street Journal is reporting it's going to be a $10 a month subscription service, and you can listen to all the music you want. Unlike Spotify, there will not be a free tier that is paid for by advertising. We've also seen the launch of Tidal, Jay-Z's streaming service, which is all about celebrity musicians giving free content, right? We mocked the opening press conference. Beats is going to have an element of that, apparently. It has paid millions of dollars to artists including Drake and Pharrell Williams to be guest personality DJs on Beats and to stay away from Tidal. So we'll see what Beats looks like very soon and whether it may soon be the new big name in the American streaming market. We should note that in the past, Beats Music has been a supporter of Sound Opinions.
That is A$AP Rocky. The new single is LSD from his new album At Long Last A$AP, and that tops the Billboard 200 chart this week. It is his second number one album. A$AP Rocky has become a mainstay in the upper regions of the pop charts. And what's interesting about the charts this first half of 2015, Jim, is how much shakeup there has been. This is already the sixth hip-hop album to top the charts. We've already had people like Drake and Kendrick Lamar and Big Sean in that top spot. Last year, if you'll recall at this time, you really couldn't break that stranglehold that that Frozen soundtrack had. That's all that was at the top of the chart for most of the first half of last year.
Taylor Swift's 1989 is still at number two.
Yes.
I put that in the Frozen category.
Yes, well, Taylor Swift's 1989 is pretty tough to dislodge. That is at number two, as you mentioned. But speaking of soundtracks, there are three movie soundtracks in the top 10 this week. That Pitch Perfect 2 soundtrack is at number four. And at 9 and 10, you've got the Shades of Grey soundtrack, and you've got the Furious 7 soundtrack. So the tie-ins with the movies are still moving big units, relatively speaking, on the charts.
Shades of Grey, of course, being your favorite movie of the last, century, really. But tell us about this church from Australia.
This is blowing my mind. It's an Australian pop folk group, a church group, Hillsong United, with a debut at number five on the charts, moved 50,000 units. It is its second top 10 album. It is an offshoot of this Hillsong Church in Australia, which also has offshoots in London, the Ukraine, Cape Town, New York. It's a Pentecostal mega Church, and this seems to be one of the ensembles that is singing the word of the Hillsong Church, bringing it to the world. They are a top five group in the United States right now. Quite an achievement for a Christian group in this day and age. Rounding out the top 10, 21 Pilots, Ed Sheeran, and your favorite, Jim, Meghan Trainor, still holding strong in that top 10.
Listening to Sound Opinions, and that is the song Hunger from the 2014 album Tyga by our guest this week, Zola Jesus. Zola Jesus is the stage name of Nika Rosa Danilova, a singer-songwriter now based in Seattle, originally from Wisconsin, who at age 26 has already released a remarkable 5 studio albums. Her first record, The Spoils, from 2009, had a spare, lo-fi quality, but on subsequent releases, she's crafted a dark, atmospheric sound filled with gothic synthesizers and string arrangements that draws equally on industrial music, classical, and mainstream pop.
But Jim, always at the forefront has been her tremendous voice, an instrument she's been developing since discovering her love of opera as a child growing up in a small town in northern Wisconsin. Zola Jesus joined us for a live taping at the Virgin Hotel in downtown Chicago, and we started by asking how she got interested in singing at such a young age.
Honestly, I'm not really sure. It's just something that felt really natural to me growing up in such an isolated area, didn't have a lot of culture or society around you to entertain you or to give you some sort of sense of purpose, so you kind of create this own thing. And singing was easy because you're born with it, you know, you're born with this instrument that you carry around with you everywhere, and so it just felt really natural to use that.
And you asked at age 7 for voice lessons and for opera training tapes?
Yeah, that's true.
But where was that coming? You know, Greg asked where you got it. Were your parents playing opera around the...
No. I mean, of course you're familiar with opera from the stereotype, the Wagnerian soprano, you know, Brunhilde, but at the same time, the idea of being able to master this thing that I just do casually, that was the thing that I wanted to do. I wanted to learn everything about it, and opera is the great Olympics of singing, and so I wanted to pursue that.
So what about a career in opera? What about classical music, you know? Ever thought about being a diva on that level?
No, it's a sinking ship, unfortunately. I mean, the industry of opera is, it's not in a good place right now. And I love it and respect it so much, but it needs to reinvent itself if it's going to continue.
Well, indie rock is hardly like, you know, you know, a guaranteed success story.
No, but I'm just saying, I feel like the exciting thing about making my own music is that I can create my own traditions. Mm. Whereas with opera, you're beholden to this tradition of the repertoire, and there's really nothing. There's new opera being made, but at the same time, it's fun to create, you know, and that's what I love about being a musician, is that opposed to an opera singer who just has to perform repertoire.
It sounded like you were a pretty curious kid in terms of just the kind of stuff you were seeking out. My sense of it, you were relatively isolated. You didn't have a lot of, I mean, you know, it wasn't like concerts were blowing through town all the time, or, you know, there was a lot going on radio-wise, and yet you seemed to have this very diverse cultural interest that you would pursue, whether it was opera, literature, you know, music. What sort of stimulated that curiosity? Mm-hmm. What was sort of bringing in this culture into your life, this diversity of stuff?
Well, it was probably fed by the inaccessibility of it, you know, not having it around. You know, it forced me to have to seek it out, and so you wanted to learn everything that you could and find these little deep corners of the world, of this information and ideas that aren't just, like, readily available to you in northern Wisconsin. So, you know, I'd go to the library, and then, of course, the internet was a wonderful resource for that, to learn about the things you're interested in and to remain curious.
I wonder if this is true. I've read that you were a teenage goth.
What does that mean?
I'm not exactly sure. I think it has something to do with black eyeliner, a lot of it.
I'm wearing black eyeliner now. I think a lot of women.
So now
do.
You're a 20-something goth.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that they sell eyeliner at the pharmacy, and it's not for goths. I think it's for people that wear makeup, but yeah.
Were you drawn to that culture, that lifestyle? I mean, I've seen your list of early influences that you've talked about a lot. Acts like the Swans, heavy stuff, Lydia Lunch. Talk about how you started to discover that kind of underground music.
Yeah, it was just, again, that thirst for discovering things that weren't readily available, you know? I'd get little kernels and seeds of this transgressive music or transgressive ideas, and then you become curious by it because nobody's talking about it, you know, where I grew up. And so you're like, why doesn't anyone know about this? It's so interesting. Like, especially the idea of challenging yourself and challenging what's acceptable to you in terms of art or ideas. And I like that. I like pushing my own buttons, you know, and finding things that do that. And bands like the Swans and Throbbing Gristle and the Residents, they did that really well, you know. They were transgressive and subversive for their time and even today because, you know, they're thinking about what can we do that provokes an emotion that people don't necessarily want to confront. Yeah. You know, it's the opposite of escapism in a way.
So we're here at the Virgin Hotel. There's, what, like 100, 150 people. How many people here have ever heard Throbbing Gristle? Wow. That says something about Zola Jesus fans, right?
Yeah.
We're looking out the window, and there's the L. It comes by every couple of minutes. The sound of the L screeching on the tracks, amplified times about 100, but way more painful, is sort of what Throbbing Gristle is.
Some you burn, some you burn, I see you crawling, I see you crawling, some you burn.
Can you talk about the invention of Zola Jesus as a character? I understand it's well, the one guy we've heard of, and then Emile Zola,
yeah.
Right? And part of it was, and I don't know if this is tough to talk about, that you had a performance fear as you know, Nika Danilova, but to invent a character freed you up.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't so much of a character as just like a band name, because when I was making music, I was in a scene with punk bands, garage punk bands, hardcore bands, and to just go out with my name felt a little forward in a way, you know? It felt more natural to be in a band because that's what I listened to and that's what my friends were in. And so Zola Jesus was like the band name, but also it gave me this freedom, you know, to not necessarily hide behind it, but to use it as a conduit for my creativity and to not have it associated with my personality all the time.
At what point did you think this is going to turn into your life, making music?
Forever.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that I've always wanted to do, but, you know, your parents always say, have a plan B, go to college. So you do that, and then you realize that nothing's going to feed you the way that the thing that you love is going to, so you just put everything into it.
Here is Zola Jesus performing Dangerous Days from her latest album, Taiga, live at the Virgin Hotel in Chicago on Sound Opinions.
You never were the one for us.
Dangerous Days by Zola Jesus, live on Sound Opinions at the Virgin Hotel in Chicago. You can catch video of her entire set on our website, soundopinions.org, and we'll have more performance and conversation with Zola Jesus in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX. Then we'll review the latest from Florence and the Machine and Greg will pop a quarter into the Desert Island Jukebox.